There's nothing on earth that compares to the Catholic priesthood. And today, priestly vocations are booming. Welcome to Vocation Boom Radio, the show that highlights the glory of the priesthood and promotes priestly vocations through exciting information and lively interviews with priests, seminarians and their families, vocation directors, seminary rectors, bishops, and those with a passion for promoting vocations. Here's the host of Vocation Boom Radio, Jerry Usher.
And greetings. Welcome to this week's episode of Vocation Boom Radio. So glad to have you along with me, Jerry Usher, and I am looking forward to welcoming my guest this week. Very good friend, personal, longtime personal friend, and certainly a colleague in ministry. He is very involved in the formation of men for the priesthood. Monsignor Eugene Morris, he is a priest of the Archdiocese of St. Louis. We'll be hearing from Monsignor Morris today, and also just his insights and perspectives about vocations in general around the country and maybe elsewhere in the world as well, because he certainly, like so many involved in formation of men today, certainly has his finger on the pulse of what's going on. So I'm looking very forward to today's broadcast. Just a couple quick things before we bring Monsignor onto the program. Want to again invite you to become a prayer partner with Vocation Boom. We have established a page on our website, and if you go to vocationboom.com, we have made it easy for you to find it. We have a number of tabs across the top. Listen, where we have our radio archives. We have the watch section with our videos, the VB team, donate, get in touch, the ways you can contact us. And then there's a pray tab. And if you hover over that and click your mouse on the first option on top, prayer campaign, you can sign up to take a specific hour of prayer during the week. Really, all that we're suggesting that you do, and this is a suggestion only, offer a Hail Mary, an Our Father, a short prayer in your own words, or take it a little bit further and spend an hour in adoration, maybe make your Mass intention on that particular day in that hour for priestly vocations and the work of Vocation Boom. You can do a rosary, chaplet of divine mercy, anything that you want, whatever fits into your schedule. It could be very, very, very short and to the point. Or like I say, you can maybe spend the whole hour in prayer. But we got a prayer roster on there, so you can join people like Gilbert in Stockton, California. He has got, and these are all Pacific times, he's got 1 to 2 p.m. Pacific time Friday covered. Vincent in Connecticut, Carla in Ceres, California. We've got who else here? Christy in Cumming, Georgia. Nick in Lakewood, Washington. Debbie in Arizona. So people all over the country. And then this is for people around the world, too. Anywhere you are, you can become a Vocation Boom prayer partner. So I wanted to invite you to check that out. Again, it's on our website at vocationboom.com. All right. Great to have you with us here listening, and it is just a joy for me to have my good friend Monsignor Eugene Morris. He was ordained in May of 1996 in the Archdiocese of St. Louis. He has been, he's done parish ministry. He's been a chaplain, and he has been involved actually in seminary work for quite some time. He began that at Kenrick Glennon Seminary, which is located in the Archdiocese of St. Louis. Monsignor Morris, it is a blessing to have you back on the program. Welcome.
Thank you, Jerry. It's always good to be with you, my friend. Thank you.
Where did we catch you today? Are you on campus?
I am on campus. This is, I think, the first Saturday that I have had free, and probably in about 4 or 5 months. And actually, I have you to thank for that, because since I was invited to be on the show, I had to obviously physically be here, and that made it easy for me to forego some other appointments. So it's a double blessing to be with you and to be actually in my office. So thank you for that.
Well, any time we can help, happy to do so. You know, let's just revisit your own vocation. You've been on the show. I'm sure you've told it before. Just to take us back to, you know, a young Eugene Morris. And, you know, when was it in your life when you looked at the priesthood and you said, maybe that's for me?
I was actually in fourth grade when the idea really kind of began to really germinate. I could think of myself or see myself as a priest. But I remember very explicitly as a sixth grader kind of making, I mean, as much as you can make that type of commitment at the age of 12, making that commitment to the priesthood, this is what I wanted to do. And as I have shared before, it really was other priests, and I've said this in a number of different venues, who made obviously all the difference. Not only, and primarily really the example of the parish priests that I was privileged to grow up with, but particularly my pastor, Monsignor Finlay, who has gone to the Lord, just a great deal of encouragement as a server and just as a young man, and then eventually kind of noticing the seeds of a vocation, encouraging me to consider a priestly vocation. And again, as a child of converts, not really something that I would have considered, and you know, not that I grew up in a home that was not faithful, but not a Catholic home kind of in the strict sense. My parents as converts really wouldn't have been aware of Catholic traditions, but encouraged me to serve and encouraged me to be involved in the church. I mean, it's not a bad place to be for a young man. So, you know, this time of year especially is very close to my heart, because I often connect my time as a server, especially during the Sacred Triduum and Holy Week, is very influential in my decision to become a priest. Particularly, Monsignor Finlay, who was my pastor, suffered from very serious arthritis of the hips and constant pain, walked with two canes, but an extremely joyful man, and every Holy Thursday would put aside his canes and get on his knees and wash the feet of 12 men in the parish. And I, you know, being up close and being able to hold the bowl or pour the water or hand him a towel, just to see this as a sign of his love for his people and his love of his priesthood, not a grimace, not a sign of complaint, but really just a joy in this profound act of service, which for him truly was a great sacrifice. I just remember thinking as a young man, and you know, always articulating it, I want to be like him. I want to do this for the rest of my life. So here I am, some 30-plus years later, being able to enjoy the blessings of a wonderful priestly life.
Yeah, and that speaks volumes, I think, about the importance of just the example of priests today. And, you know, do you think, I know you probably, you're in touch with, you know, this whole vocational mindset, because this is kind of what you do as your assignment in your ministry now. But do you think priests just generally understand the impact they can have on young men just simply by being joy-filled and living their priesthood with zeal?
You know, I honestly don't know that. I mean, obviously, the men who are here certainly are testimonies to that. And, you know, we encourage them to return to their home parishes, be in contact with the priests who are part of their lives, to be able to know that. I certainly think the younger clergy, now that they are getting ordained, and they themselves having benefited from wonderful priestly examples, are certainly understand that. And so I'm privileged to be in contact with a number of the young priests here in this Diocese of Columbus who have been students of mine, and just listening to their energy and enthusiasm in terms of what they have put in place in their parish to bring them into contact with young people in general, but specifically with young men, and to really encourage them in their priestly vocations and that enthusiasm. You can see it in the younger clergy, and I guess I can say that now, that they understand not only the importance of encouragement and pointing out to a young man that he has the qualities and, you know, skills and disposition for priestly life, but that joy that also comes then, you know, where the young men see priests who are happy. You know this as well as I, all the studies, you know, Caris studies every year, Pew studies make it clearly indicate that there is that personal invitation and that zealousness, that joy, that are so integral in fostering priestly vocations. And, of course, I think truly that's always been the case.
I want to invite our listeners to call in Monsignor Eugene Morris with us here on the program today. This is Vocation Boom Radio, if you've just tuned in. One of the outreaches of Vocation Boom, you'll find us at .com, vocationboom.com on the web. Great to have all of you listening. You talk about the guys today, Monsignor, and you know, I travel a lot too. I'm meeting these young priests that you just referred to a minute ago, and the seminarians as well. And I always feel a little bit guilty when I, you know, sing their praises, because it's kind of like we're saying, you know, this is something new that we're seeing, this high quality of young men coming forward. And of course, the priests who've been serving us for decades are just outstanding and upstanding men as well. But there's just a something different going on today. I mean, and I think maybe it stands out more starkly because of the culture that we're in right now. What do you think?
I agree wholeheartedly with that. And again, I think your point is an extremely valuable one. Certainly all of us of an older vintage, if you will, you know, benefited by the priests who've come before. So, you know, none of us are kind of sprung whole cloth. What's different is that the culture has, over the last 30, 40 years, has been so much energy downplaying the priesthood or speaking negatively of the priesthood and denigrating the priestly vocation that I think, you know, they're just at times, and this was my own experience in the seminary, there was kind of a pall that settled over you know, the reality of priestly life. We wanted in the seminary to be priests, and many of my good friends, we were blessed to be ordained to the priesthood, but we didn't really expect that there would be social acceptance for that. We knew of the sacrifices that would come. We knew the, you know, kind of the opprobrium that would be heaped on us by society and culture. And so, you know, again, while we didn't, you know, you didn't pray for a downward turn or a continuation of a decline of vocations, it was kind of an expected thing, and you could even at times hear about it in terms of how bishops approached, you know, pastoral ministry and you know, how they dealt with different situations in their diocese. There just was this kind of a general kind of acceptance, both externally in terms of dominant culture, but having seeped in a little bit interiorly in the life of the church herself. So to know that in the last, you know, my whole time in priestly formation, which began in 2001 when I came back from Rome, so going on 13 years now, there's been not only not a decline, but actually an increase in priestly vocations. The median age has gotten younger, and the enthusiasm that these young men are bringing. And in one sense, the culture hasn't changed. Actually, the culture kind of has intensified its antipathy toward religion, towards church, toward priesthood. And that also, I think, increases, if you will, the vibrancy that we're experiencing because these young men are truly making great sacrifices. Again, not to say that we or others priests did not and are not making sacrifices, but 30 years ago when I entered religious life and began this process of preparing for priestly life, you know, the priesthood just wasn't suffering in the way that priests have suffered in the last decade and a half. And so, and we really can't deny that there has been that suffering. So to see the young men come who are, I mean, knowing the sacrifices they make, and I hear it from these guys where, you know, family members have cut them off or relationships have become strained because the young men who, you know, especially our college men, you know, showed what people would perceive as great promise and then they decide to waste that by coming to the seminary. They had full rides or scholarships maybe to prestigious institutions and again, wasted that. That's the language that people will use to come here. And yet they did do that, you know, against, in some instances, some very serious pressure. It's a manifestation, you know, of, you know, their strength individually, but they're really the power of grace and the power of God working in the world. So, you know, contrary to what, you know, modern media will say or, you know, the New York Times, which periodically says the church is dead or dying, you come to a place like this and other seminaries, and it's going on across the country, and you know this, nothing could be further from the church. The church is very much alive. We'll see that, obviously, on Holy Saturday at the Easter Vigil, and you see that, you know, when you walk into seminaries today.
Yeah. And just describe, you know, you're talking about this really dynamic, alive, vibrant atmosphere on the campus there at the Josephinum. Describe that for our listeners.
Well, you know, it manifests itself, I think, first of all, they're wanting to be here. And one of the things that, you know, the Josephinum has prided itself on is that it is a welcoming environment. And again, not that other places are not, but that there is a warmth that's exuded here that when visitors come on campus or when the new men arrive, a great deal of energy is expended in welcoming them into the family that is the Josephinum. Because we serve so many different dioceses across the country and we are not a diocesan seminary, there is kind of the added pressure in a good way of making sure that we do create an environment where people feel very much at home here. That translates then into how the men interact with each other, the quality of the prayer life, the desire for prayer. So adoration is very much a part of our daily life. We have adoration every day, but required only once a week for the whole community, but offered every day. And how many men take advantage of that? You know, so it's not just one or two or three guys that will show up in the chapel. It's the majority of men every single day are making a commitment to be here. So whereas in the past there may have been, you know, a sense of drudgery in terms of taking, you know, responsibility for prayer life, the young men are coming with just a real hunger and a desire to learn about the faith, to know the faith, to be able to offer and evangelize the faith, to grow in their prayer lives. And even for those men who come and discern that this isn't their vocation, you know, they by coming, they have done a great service not only for themselves but for the church, because here is a young man who has developed some good habits of prayer, who has discerned what his vocation is, and will leave knowing that he's called to married life, and, you know, will pursue that, you know, but understanding that is as a part of a reflection of a relationship with God. So just, you know, when you're hearing so much from culture that there is a ponderousness about the church, and it's an onerous reality for young people, and then to see not only, you know, what World Youth Days have exemplified, but to come and actually see it day in and day out. The thing I love about being at a seminary is precisely that. It encourages me, and it actually gives me a great deal of hope. And, you know, as a spiritual father, and we talk about that here, it's also that wonderful responsibility that I have to continue, you know, my own prayer life, and really working to keep my zeal up, because I am responsible for these young men. And so it's paid dividends not only in what I've offered, but, you know, what I've received from them as well.
Yeah, and you talk about, you know, these guys, they want to be there, and like you said, there's a freedom, hopefully anyway. I know a lot of guys probably put pressure on themselves to, you know, once they're there, they probably think, well, you know, I'm locked into this, I'm going to disappoint family or friends or whatever, you know, if I don't follow through with this. But for the most part, I know that there's a real freedom in discerning that. And would you say, and I know what you're going to say to this, because, you know, it's probably a softball question, but is the seminary really the only place where a guy can really, I mean, dig deep in and truly discern a vocation to the priesthood?
What answer are you looking for? Because I want to say yes.
Well, yeah, but, that's what I'm. In other words, you know,
yes.
I mean, he can't discern the priesthood while he's, you know, out in the world dating, for example, or, you know, here's my point. I've had people, bishops and priests and others, say, you know, if a guy really is serious about discerning it, he's got to take that step.
That's definitely true. I mean, so any young man who is thinking about a priestly vocation and wants to know if this is it, you have to go do it. There really is no other way of knowing it. Because what happened, and again, you know, seminarians will be the first ones to tell you that even in coming here, in some ways there is a disparity between, you know, the process of formation and then living priestly life. That's true. We all know that. Our vocations ultimately are not to the seminary. Our vocations are to the priesthood. But this is the place really to try that, to a life of community, a life of service, and really a life of prayer and life of study. And this is something I think oftentimes it's lost on the nature of the secular priesthood, the diocesan priesthood particularly, a little bit distinct from religious priesthood, is that there is still, well, you know, diocesan priests oftentimes are called kind of the worker bees. There is very much the emphasis and importance placed on your own individual prayer life and your own ongoing life of study, precisely because that's what you're going to be doing for the faithful as well. And so while, you know, again, there are encounters with God that can happen outside of this, and there are a great many men who will tell you that they obviously, in, you know, thought about it over a long period of time, especially when we're looking at our pre-theologians, who are men who have already completed college, probably worked in the world for a while. Really, in that first 6 months, they will talk about just what a radical difference it's made making the decision to come here. And for some, it really does affirm that this is exactly where they were supposed to be, and they're kind of frustrated at themselves that they took so long. For others, it confirms that they shouldn't be here. And again, there's nothing wrong with that. There is no pressure to come and stay. The pressure is, as our Lord invited, come and see. See what happens. Let me speak to you in a place of quiet and solitude so you can really hear my voice. And again, we shouldn't think in terms of if a man were to leave the seminary that something has been lost. If he has truly discerned his vocation in spiritual direction, in formation, you know, and been, as you say, free and honest in his relationship with God, when he leaves here, he will know himself better. Most importantly, know himself better in his relationship with God and understand that every vocation is at the service of Christ and Holy Mother Church. And that will make him a good Catholic layman, which is very much necessary in the life of the church.
Yeah, it's a no-lose situation,
exactly.
Really.
Exactly. Win-win, you know. So, but you're all right, yes. You know, because I do hear some people say, you know, well, you don't have, you know, parents might say this at times, that you don't have to go to the seminary right away. But in one sense, why not? And I was actually just sharing with someone the other day that I was very grateful that I went in. I was 18 years old when I entered religious life. I started my life as a religious, a Jesuit of the Missouri province, and spent 8 years in religious life, and then discerned that I was called to diocesan priesthood, and so left and went immediately to the diocesan seminary at home. I'm grateful I went at 18, and actually I'm grateful even more so for my formators who were able to take a, you know, an immature 18-year-old, and to form him and to nurture him, me, into a grown man, eventually a priest who would be able to make a free decision to respond to God's call. You know, it's tricky with younger people at times, but actually it's not, because they do really know their mind. And they understand what's in the world, in some senses, I think, better than I did, just because of social media and how much of the world is easily accessible through Internet and Facebook and Twitter and all of that. You know, the world is not, the veils, if you will, the separation have really come down. So it's not lost on them, the sacrifices that they're making. They don't feel the need necessarily to go live in the world to really kind of experiment or you know, discover what's out there, because they already know that. Actually, what's missing is this piece of, well, what is it like to come behind these walls and spend time in quiet and in prayer?
Yeah. Well, we're going to take a break here. Monsignor Eugene Morris with us on Vocation Boom Radio today. I'm your host, Jerry Usher. Perhaps you've got a young man in your life as a son, a grandson, a nephew, or just someone that you know, maybe a young man in your parish, and you would like some advice from Monsignor Morris about helping to encourage him to at least be open to the priesthood. If you have spent some time in the seminary yourself and made that difficult decision to discern out and go on to something else, or maybe you're still thinking about the priesthood, or if you're a gentleman who has had that, perhaps felt that tug on your heart for a while, haven't really quite known what to do with that. Maybe you're wondering, what are the first steps? Who do I talk to first? Maybe you're in a dating relationship, perhaps even engaged. A lot of different scenarios you can run by Monsignor Morris here on the program today. Going to get a short break here on Vocation Boom Radio, but there's a lot more to come, so I hope you'll stay with us.
Vocation Boom Radio.
Vocation Boom is here to help you in your effort to aid all the young men you know in finding their vocation. Most will not be called to the priesthood, but some will be. The question is, do they have the information and resources available to them that will help to open their minds and hearts to the Lord's call? VocationBoom.com is one of many great websites designed to do just that. We offer audio and video galleries, archives of Vocation Boom Radio, information on dioceses, archdioceses, and religious orders, a list of U.S. seminaries, and lots more. Log on today and be sure to tell all the young men you know about VocationBoom.com.
There are many ways to study the faith. Some take less time than others. With the Faith Database, you can learn the faith in little or no time at all. That's because it features a fully integrated search tool that allows you to enter a word or a phrase, and in seconds, you're viewing entries from thousands of books and other documents that pertain to the topic you're looking for. Details about the Faith Database are at faithdatabase.com. Speakers like Tim Staples and Patrick Madrid use the Faith Database to research the talks they give all across the country. They make use of its more than 10 Bible translations, over 1,500 full-length Christian classic books, the Fathers and Doctors of the Church, council documents, and a lot more. You can use the Faith Database to read entire volumes or to search instantly for dozens of quick references to one specific faith topic, because it's fully searchable and results appear right away. Learn more about the Faith Database at faithdatabase.com. That's faithdatabase.com.
Dynamic Deacon Harold Burke Sivers is available to come to your next event.
It's you! That's where they encounter Jesus Christ, in you! That's where they learn to fall in love with Jesus, through you!
Deacon Harold is ready to inspire you and to motivate you to have a greater faith in God and living the life of the church.
What is the Goliath that has you so scared that you can't take your faith to the next level? Why is your prayer life just stuck? You can't take anything to that next level because there's something holding you back.
Be on fire for your Catholic faith. Invite Deacon Harold to your parish, conference, or retreat.
Jesus says, in order to be my disciples, you must pick up your cross and follow me.
Book Deacon Harold today through his website, deaconharold.com, by contacting thirdmillenniummedia.com, or by calling 541-212-8616 today.
Enjoy a freshly roasted cup of coffee from your friends at Vocation Boom to help support our efforts to foster vocations to the priesthood. We're offering morning lods, a delicious breakfast roast, evening Vespers Italian dark roast, and discernment Brazilian decaf. All grown on a sixth-generation Catholic family farm in Brazil, utilizing all of the industry standards for sustainability and ethics, and prepared using innovative state-of-the-art roasting techniques. Place your order for Vocation Brew and support your diocese and parish by joining us in helping build a culture of priestly vocations. Log on to vocationboom.com to learn more. That's vocationboom.com.
For some, God's call is like a whisper. For others, it's more of a... support, encouragement, and inspiration for those called to the priesthood.
All right, good to have you along today on Vocation Boom Radio. Well, we got some calls, Monsignor. You want to take some listener calls?
Yes, please.
All right, so we're going to start with Christopher, who got on board first, so you get to go first. Christopher from San Antonio, welcome to the program.
Hi, how are you?
Good, how are you doing, Christopher?
I'm not Catholic, this is talking about ASCO, but I was wondering, why are priests not allowed to marry, and why does it have to be celibate for their entire life?
The beautiful question. I would rephrase it not so much as they have to be, as much as they choose to be. It is a church discipline and has been really from the beginning of the history of the church themselves. The apostles left their families to go be with the Lord and follow after him, although there was a responsibility to take care of them. But the church has always understood, and it's beautifully expressed in the ritual for ordination, that the commitment to celibacy is a reflection of one's complete and total dedication to the work of the Lord. And this is not to say that others who don't choose to be celibate aren't dedicated to the Lord, but clearly, as a practical note, that life of celibacy allows the priest to be available, as we talk about here, you know, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Again, priests are not, but there is an availability that's manifested by this commitment to celibacy. There's also the understanding that celibates, this would be true for priests, it's also true for consecrated religious who take a vow of chastity, that we choose celibacy and chastity because, as the Lord himself says in Scripture, there is no giving or taking of or receiving of marriage in heaven. So we anticipate living here on earth as all of us will live in heaven, turned toward that beatific vision. But for the priest, it really is that understanding of the gift of himself expended in service to Christ and Holy Mother Church, and to offer himself on behalf of those that he's actually called to serve. And because it is a choice that each, you know, man is going to be asked to make, one of the constant conversations that we have is about the freedom to choose celibacy. That, you know, a man wouldn't be choosing celibacy because he's fearing the world or he's running away from the world. This isn't a place to hide out, but rather he understands that he is indeed offering this gift to God, and really needs to offer it with joy. It's not something that one can simply just kind of not white-knuckle his way through, but really has to enter in with joy. And so that's just a part of this process of formation, conversation that happens in preparation for men to the priesthood.
All right, Christopher, thanks for that call from San Antonio, listening on Guadalupe Radio Network. Vocation Boom Radio, we're talking with Monsignor Eugene Morris. We're going to go to Columbus, Ohio. Deborah Maria is listening to the program there. Deborah Maria, thank you for your call. How are you?
Oh, fine. Thank you. And Monsignor Morris, I heard you speak at a Marian conference. I was greatly encouraged in your enthusiasm for Jesus and the whole body, the whole Catholic Church is just amazing. I'm a revert back to the Catholic Church through the death of my husband.
Oh, very
and,
sorry.
Yeah, he's with the Lord, so you know, I'm just happy for him. And I'm a founding member of Mega Church, Vineyard of Columbus. It's got about 11,000 members. And but through my husband's slow process of dying to go to home to the Lord, I end up in the I got listened to Catholic radio, and it brought me home to the Catholic Church. So So I'm just, you know, it's been 3 years since he went home to the Lord, and I rejoined it right after he died, and so it's been an incredible journey. And I just had a question. I've just noticed a lot of things. There is a lot more enthusiasm for Jesus and Mary and just the whole fullness of Christ in the Catholic Church. And I've been I've been an intercessor for the young men, and we've had a few older men become on the journey to becoming priests. But I've noticed that there's a lot of enthusiasm, you know, let's get the young men out there and all that. And then as a single person, I've just noticed a lot of things, and there seems to be quite a number of single men in the Catholic Church. I don't meet a lot of single men, but I've been doing studies because we're getting ready for hopefully a diocesan-wide singles ministry here in Columbus, God willing. And but there's so many, I guess my understanding is like over half of Catholics are single, like they're maybe widowed or annulled or just for a wide variety of reasons. Could we possibly be, I don't know how the word, communicate to all these single older men who have so much to bring to the table as our priests? Could we encourage them to consider pursuing, priesthood?
The short answer would be yes. I mean, there certainly wouldn't be per se any reason why we could not encourage them. You know, part of the encouragement, or I guess what I would also respond is that, you know, as we look at the number, you mentioned, you know, a number of different kind of states in life, people who are widowed, people who are single, maybe, you know, through just kind of happenstance as their lives developed. You know, there is, from the Second Vatican Council, that universal call to holiness, that every believer in the mystery of Jesus Christ, every Catholic, is called to be on this journey toward that holiness that manifests itself in the manner in which they interact with the Church. And so, it may seem kind of counterintuitive of me to make this statement, but everyone is called to that level of service and engagement in the life of the Church. There is a particularity and kind of specificity to the life of the priest, and so there is a kind of a both and in terms of the priesthood, in that he is both encouraged to do so, but there also needs to be that invitation or that call from God himself. So you might find some of these single men may not themselves necessarily feel called to the priesthood. I was in conversation with someone recently about that, just kind of thinking about kind of where his life had gone and kind of discussing that particular question. So not everybody necessarily feels called to that particular vocation, but everyone is called to that type of service in the life of the Church. So we wouldn't, you know, as we're encouraging everyone to, you know, pray for an increase of priestly vocations, which we do, pray for the grace of perseverance in those vocations, we would couple that with everyone, you know, according to their state in life, praying also for everyone to kind of put out into the deep and respond to that call to holiness that Christ is asking us for.
Man, right, young man, and I'm thinking, oh, Lordy, there's some widower who's 62 years old who probably could bring so much to the table as a priest. You know what I'm saying?
Correct. The other practical reality is it is a young man's game. And so you're in the sense you're looking at a man who's going to be 62, 63 years old who would have to go back to school, you know, and as Jerry was talking about earlier, the process for men who are coming from maybe a second vocation, there's still, it's, you know, 6 years of formation that a guy has to go through. So it's not an impossibility. And there are we have a number of men who are older, and there is actually a seminary on the East Coast that not exclusively, but is oriented toward helping older vocations. But there also is that dynamic of, as you get older, you know, it's harder to do physically, emotionally, spiritually. So, but I mean, there again, we'll see that this year as we look at the statistics for, you know, men ordained to the priesthood this year. They always do kind of a profile of the class of priestly ordinations throughout the United States. I'm sure we'll see, as we have in years past, you know, a number of older vocations, men in their 50s, 60s, I think even sometimes men even in their 70s, depending on need and desire and energy and things of that nature. But, you know, that encouragement, as you're looking at a man who is 62, 63, who is a widower, may not necessarily, he wouldn't necessarily have to encourage priestly vocation for him to bring his gifts and talents to the table for the life of the Church.
All right, Deborah Maria, thank you for your phone call and participating in the program today. We greatly appreciate that. Steve in Boston, hang on, we'll get to you in a second. I just wanted to ask Monsignor a follow-up question, and that is with regard to the age of the men coming into formation today, I think we're seeing the average age coming down a little bit, aren't we?
Very much so, very much so. And I would anticipate that would continue as we see our college programs, which really, I would think probably from the late 80s through the 90s, you know, kind of really fell off first before we saw a decrease in schools of theology, graduate schools of theology, seminary kind of in the strictest sense. We saw an impact first in our college seminaries. That trend's beginning to reverse itself. And young men, again, are making this, you know, I mean, and these are just all not anecdotes, these are just experiences I've been having in the last couple of weeks of, you know, young men, you know, priest friends of mine communicating to me, high school students that they know, juniors and seniors who are very serious that this is their call and this is what they want to do. And again, because they know the world so well, in one sense, it's an easier choice to make, harder because of maybe the pressures the world is placing on them, but easier in that they already know what the world's about. They already kind of know what they are going to be offering up, and a great deal of courage to kind of move forward. So I'd anticipate we would continue to see that median age kind of dropping some more.
Vocation Boom Radio, Jerry Usher here with Monsignor Eugene Morris. We're going to talk next with Steve in Boston. Steve, thanks for calling the program.
Hey, good morning. Good afternoon, gentlemen. I appreciate the call. So I want to talk more about not so much the priesthood is becoming a deacon. Not to change gears on you guys, but so I am a 47-year-old male, you know, three young kids under eight, and you know, with a wife who is support of me going on that journey of becoming a deacon, and I have a spiritual director that I'm working with, and you know, thankfully financially, we know that the monies that we need to be take care of my family. I guess I want to get your feedback on, you know, having been a priest for so many years and seeing the church evolve and men that have become deacon. Would you recommend somebody who has a younger family to be involved in becoming a deacon?
You know, that's a very good question. I was actually the vicar for our deacons for 5 years and taught in our program for formation for permanent deacons. It was and really from the deacons themselves, and this is one of the issues, I'm not waffling because I can't give an answer. We debated back and forth. I worked with a number of deacons in the formation process, many of whom had been involved in our permanent diaconate program in the Archdiocese of St. Louis really from its very beginnings, who were adamantly opposed to younger men choosing the vocation, especially younger men as yourself with a family. Others, myself, also said, however, you know, when you're, as we were just talking about older vocations, you also don't want necessarily an older, not, you can't, but you do want, in a sense, a man who's going to be able to give himself, if indeed he's called to the diaconate, you know, be able to give, you know, not just in terms of years, but be able to give time and energy to this reality. So when I was the vicar of the office, we took it really case by case. And what that meant for us was, you know, ongoing conversations, and by ongoing, I mean every 6 months with the candidate and his wife, just kind of assessing from them, how is this impacting your family? What's going on with your family? Because, you know, and again, from diocese to diocese, formation programs are different. But ours was a rather rigorous one and, you know, required, you know, commitments during the week and on the weekends, plus expectations of what they would be doing in terms of the service they would be rendering at their parishes on Sundays and on the weekends. And so the wife's commitment to that was very integral, and we felt a need to kind of to keep involved in that. So would I say a hard and fast rule? No, I would not recommend it. I think there does need to be a respect for the impact of what the program is going to have. And I think for both vocations, both for the marriage, obviously, already the lived vocation, but also then being able to really enter into the commitments of a life as a permanent deacon, because we've also had, we did experience the other side, if you will, of, you know, a man going through the program, but really finding once he was ordained, because of his commitments to his family, young family, number of children, he really wasn't able to engage and felt really kind of an unnecessary pull. And all of us were in agreement that they shouldn't be and they can't be in competition with each other. We don't want a man having to choose between, you know, his life as a deacon and his life as husband and father, particularly when that was the primary vocation. And in one sense, some of the conversation about the permanent diaconate comes out of the context of that married vocation. So as a hard and fast rule, I would say no. You would need to really take it case by case and really be involved not only with you personally, with your spiritual director, but those who are in charge of your formation, kind of keeping up with you and your wife and your family to make sure that that proper balance and support is actually there.
Well, I appreciate that because that seems to be the plan I'm on now. I have a 3-year journey, so, you know, during that time a lot could change, but I just wanted feedback from a standpoint of somebody who's in the industry, so I appreciate the
not at all, and
feedback.
I will certainly pray for you.
Thank you, sir.
You're welcome.
All right. Thank you, Steve, for joining us. On the other side of the break, Monsignor, I'll give you a couple of minutes here to think about this and prepare. But, you know, a lot of people may think that I'm just kind of a rah-rah cheerleader guy for all the good stuff going on in vocations. But these guys, we've talked about it already. They're coming out of the same milieu that we're all living in, you know, broken families and the cultural challenges and all this stuff. So I want to get into a little bit, you know, some of the maybe just some of the things that these guys have to do battle with, you know, along the way. So maybe you can be thinking about that, and we can just talk about some of the challenges that face these young men who are answering the call to the priesthood today. And there's much more that we're going to talk about with Monsignor Morris when we come back right here on Vocation Boom Radio, courtesy of the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.
Will you join our mission? Support us today at vocationboom.com. Parents, tell your sons about Vocation Boom Radio. And we're online at vocationboom.com.
Renew your mind with greater hope and purpose. Coming to a conference, retreat, or parish near you. Deacon Harold Burke Sivers.
Jesus Christ is King of Kings and Lord of Lords, because he's the greatest of all kings and the Lord of all lords.
Popular Catholic radio show host Jerry Usher.
I didn't know the blessing, God's blessing. And what that is knowing who I am and you knowing who you are before God.
Catholic Church religious demonologist Adam Bly.
The spiritual world is very legalistic. The demons are bound by rules. If you learn the rules that they are bound to operate under, God's rules, you're greatly empowered.
You can book Adam Bly, Jerry Usher, or Deacon Harold Burke Sivers today. Contact Nick Scott at Third Millennium Media, 541-212-8616, or at thirdmillenniummedia.com.
Discerning coffee drinkers, enjoy some of the best coffee on earth and increase vocations to the priesthood at the same time. If that sounds like just your type of unbeatable combination, then you'll love sipping Vocation Brew, available in 3 terrific blends. Morning Lauds, a medium breakfast roast. Evening Vespers, dark Italian roast. And Discernment Brazilian decaf. Our coffee partner, Nossa Familia, has been growing beans sustainably and ethically for 6 generations on a family farm in Brazil. By purchasing Vocation Brew, you'll enjoy freshly roasted coffee and help build a culture of priestly vocations. All of the proceeds from the sale of Vocation Brew go right back into our efforts to encourage young men to say yes to God's call to the priesthood. Place your order today at vocationboom.com. That's vocationboom.com.
Invite a powerful and dynamic Catholic speaker to your parish, conference, or retreat.
I am God's son. I belong to the Father. He loves me. He has empowered me. And whatever challenge I face, I'm going to overcome. That's masculine genius. But let me ask you a question. What is your plan? What is your plan for achieving holiness? Your mission is in heaven. What's your plan?
Be introduced to Joe McClain.
How are you going to achieve a state of grace today? How often do you get to the confessional? Do you try to take in an extra mass during the week? Do you examine your conscience every single night? I know a lot of people, saints who get to heaven, because they laid it all on the line and gave 110%. What is your plan?
Book Joe McClain today by contacting Third Millennium Media at thirdmillenniummedia.com
or call 541-212-8616 today.
I am a good listener.
Yo puedo hablar dos idiomas.
I'm able to speak two languages.
I am able to see the goodness in everyone.
I am very funny. I'm serious.
I am praying for my brother.
I am an avid reader.
I am reading the Bible again. I mean, really reading it.
I am true to myself.
A true friend.
True to my word.
I am answering God's calling.
Vocation Boom Radio. Don't forget we're online at vocationboom.com, adding more and more resources there. We're going to get to John in Augusta in just a few minutes here. But, John, hang on. I wanted to bring up with Monsignor Morris, as I said going into the break. Monsignor, I have this mental picture. I want to make it into a poster someday. And if there are any graphic artists listening who want to do this as a favor for us, feel free to do so. But it would be this kind of this bombed out city, you know, with just rubble everywhere and smoke and dust and debris. And out of this smoke and dust are walking these young, you know, sturdy looking, handsome young guys, you know, with priestly clerical clothes on, you know. And my thinking there is, you know, these guys are emerging out of really the rubble of culture and the breakdown of the family and so many challenges and allurements and temptations. These guys have to be coming into the seminary. I mean, we talk about their high virtue, their character, their prayerfulness, their zeal, their passion. But at the same time, they have to have their demons that they're doing battle with, I would guess.
You're exactly correct. And I'm glad you kind of brought that up in a sense because, you know, we are realistic about what we're dealing with. And, you know, priests, as I said earlier, we're not, you know, sprung whole cloth from the ground. We do come from families. We come from the culture in which we find ourselves. And so at times we must confront, and this is true with, you know, almost every man here, not all, you know, a degree of what we refer as, you know, taking off the old man and putting on the new man. And that's the beauty of the formation process, is that it actually allows that to actually happen. But, you know, to understand that it is a process. No one has the expectation when a young man enters, you know, particularly, let's say he enters our college program, that he is at that point ready for ordination. You know, we're looking at 8 years. And this is 8 years of intentional formation, which is both, you know, positive in the sense of giving the skills and developing the habits and dispositions, but also, if you want to formulate it negatively, you know, taking care of those deficiencies that each individual man brings with him. And particularly, you know, coming from broken families where there has been fracture in the family in some way, and especially now with younger, just what the culture itself has said about the nature of religion, about understandings of freedom, realities of sacrifice. So in one sense, even, you know, men that are coming from good, solid Catholic families need to be challenged, if you will, to kind of let go of that taint of the modern culture, which is a tendency toward a selfishness and a self-absorption. You know, it is a tweeting culture where everyone thinks that everything they're doing is extremely important and should be shared with everybody. And you're taking on a lifestyle that requires a selflessness and a self-effacing and a humility and kind of losing oneself in what actually is going on. That doesn't happen overnight. And it's not lost on any of us who are doing formation, the work that we have to do in order to assist men. So some very serious issues with which you need to contend. Maybe bringing baggage from, you know, bad physical relationships that they had with girlfriends. And helping them understand and recapture a greater degree of purity, a secondary virginity. So all of those things are there. But I think, again, what is encouraging for me is knowing that these issues are there, there really is an openness, and the word that I use oftentimes, a disponibility to being molded. It's hard to do that. It's hard for all of us, and all of us are part of this. And so it isn't as if we're exempt from that. I think we as formators, you know, going through spiritual direction ourselves in prayer ourselves, are also aware of, you know, being honest before God and how we interact with these men, so that what happens is really for the good of the church and the good for this man as he prepares himself for priestly life, priestly ministry.
Yeah, we got about just a minute or two here. And on that same note there, and I've said this on the program before, obviously there are going to be men who perhaps have, you know, like you said, this baggage in their past. They have a conversion of some sort. They may present themselves as a hoped-for candidate for the priesthood. And there could very well be reasons why the church cannot accept them. However, Monsignor, I'd like you to comment just briefly for a moment on the fact that, you know, a lot of these and I don't want to call them garden variety mistakes, but they're the same things. You know, it's just human nature. These, if guys have made mistakes and been down certain paths, that doesn't necessarily preclude them from considering the priesthood, which they may think it would.
That is correct. And you would have to really be open about that and present that to your vocation director at the beginning, or maybe even before, a vocation director, a spiritual director who could help you parse that out. But, you know, you're right. There are certainly things that would maybe make a man not an apt candidate, either because of experiences that he had or dispositions with which he's struggling. He may come and maybe need to leave and work on those before he would come back. There are other men who, as you say, might think, well, you know, I've done X, Y, and Z. I can't do that. I would not say that. I would say go talk to somebody first. Let them know what it is that you think may, you know, invalidate you, and let's see actually what that actually is and kind of go from there.
Monsignor Eugene Morris with us here. You get to encourage young men all the time, Monsignor, about they're already, you know, pretty much on that path potentially toward the priesthood. But for any young men who are listening right now who haven't yet taken that step, give them a quick word of encouragement.
You have to do it. The beautiful thing about the seminary, and I've only seen, you know, improvements in terms of the joy and the enthusiasm. It is the best place to come and actually do this. And even if you come just for 6 months, you've come, you've discerned. And a lot of men will tell you that they know, and it's almost right away when they walk through the door, if it's good for them to be here or not. And even those who stay for a while, make the decision to depart. I've never seen anyone who's regretted his time in the seminary, has found it extremely valuable. So, as we said earlier, you know, there's nothing to lose, really, and everything to gain in coming to the seminary and in considering it.
Very good, very good. You know what? I didn't get to John in Augusta, Maine. John, we got about 60 seconds. I apologize. Forget about you, John. Are you still there?
I am.
Okay, sorry about that. I forgive me for that. If you can make it quick, we'll let Monsignor give you a real brief answer.
Real quick, I was educated with the Brothers of Christian Instruction up here in Maine. They came down from Canada, and they're actually monks. Could monks take their holy orders if there was an immediate shortage of priests and fill in, if you will? That's my quick question.
About 60 seconds, Monsignor.
Can monks fill in?
Alfred Maine, Brothers of Christian Instruction, they come down from Canada and they go to Plattsburgh, New York. They are actual monks. I don't know worldwide the amount of monks there are, but could a monk who taken a vow of celibacy, he could easily move in and take the holy orders if there was an immediate emergency shortage?
Not necessarily. So for a variety of different reasons, not the least of which is a lot of monasteries and monks who choose not to be priests have actually chosen that intentionally, so they wouldn't want to necessarily do that. Conversely, there are others, monastic communities, where there are both priests and brothers. But certainly, if a man who started his life as a brother in a monastic community made the decision that he wanted to, you know, move toward priesthood, or there was a need for priesthood, he would be obligated to go through the same formation and preparation for priestly life as any other man as well in that regard.
All right, John, glad we were able to fit you in there. Sorry, I was going to almost forgot about you. Thanks for the call. Monsignor, a quick blessing from you, please.
Certainly. May the blessing of Almighty God, Father, Son, and Holy Spirit descend upon you and remain with you forever. Amen.
Amen. Thanks so much for your time today, and should mention that Monsignor Morris is on the Vocation Boom Advisory Team. You will see his handsome picture and a short bio of him right there on our website. Monsignor, thank you for your longtime support of our ministry, and it's just great to have you a part of what we're doing.
Thank you, Jerry. I appreciate it very much. God bless you.
All right. Again, Monsignor Eugene Morris here on Vocation Boom Radio. It has been great having you with us here on the program. I want to remind you again, please log on to our website, vocationboom.com, and become a prayer partner with us. You'll see the Pray tab at the top of the page. It's highlighted in yellow to make it easy for you to find it. Hover your mouse over that, click on prayer campaign, pick an hour during the week. All the times listed are Pacific time. If an hour shows is being taken already, take it anyway and team up with someone in praying for priestly vocations and also for the work of Vocation Boom. I'm Jerry Usher. It has been a blessing having you with us here today on the program.